Hi, Christine. How's it going?
Hey, Lauren. I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. I've been, like usual, super busy. I am coming up to my big race this season, so then after that, it's all, like, podcast and work, so
yes.
I'm looking forward to that, even though I, like, love my race season. It's just, like, a lot.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So much training.
What have you been up to, Christine?
I've been good. I started my new job. I am loving it. It's a really good fit for me. So really happy with that.
Your cat is, like, unusually needy today.
Like, very affectionate right now. He hasn't been fucking with me since I got home. He's been hiding.
He wants to podcast.
Podcast. He's like, oh, it's time.
This is Pod of the Dragon. We are the podcast about House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, anything going on in Westeros. Listeners, today we are doing the penultimate season of our epic Game of Thrones rewatch. And since seasons 7 and 8 are shorter, less episodes, we're actually covering them all in one episode of our podcast. So this is a rewatch series, so we are covering basically, you know, the season that we're talking about, but we're also, like, full-on spoilers for the entire show Game of Thrones. We're talking about other seasons in this. We're talking about the final season. If you are here for some reason and haven't watched Game of Thrones yet and you're intending to, maybe catch up on that real quick. House of the Dragon is coming out very soon, and we're all rewatching. That's why we're doing this series.
That's why we're doing it. Also want to give a content warning. We talk about anything that happens on Game of Thrones, and a lot of fucked up shit happens on Game of Thrones.
A lot.
Content warning for, what's in this season, but rape,
well,
incest violence.
For sure, yeah.
Rape, incest, violence, child murder. Before we jump in, I have an update for
what's that?
The listeners. So I found the House of the Dragon game. It does exist.
Yeah. It's not a fever dream. We talked about this on a mini-sode, but yeah, couldn't find it, and now it's real.
It's not a fever dream. It's not a Mandela effect. It's just been really poorly advertised, I think, but I did see an ad for it the other day, and I went and downloaded it. It's called Drakaris, with, like, the AR capitalized for augmented reality. So it's like a Pokemon Go kind of game, but it's just it's a Tamagotchi, basically, where you have a dragon. The game opens and there's just all these dragons that they show you on the floor are dragon eggs, and you pick one and then it hatches and then you name it.
So you just take care of one dragon.
I don't know if there's going to be more dragons eventually, but right now it's just like a Tamagotchi with one dragon. My dragon's name
I'm in for that.
Yeah, my dragon's name is Virebell, which is apparently High Valyrian for Fire Boy.
Nice.
I named the dragon Fire Boy, and then it translated it to High Valyrian.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, yeah, it's kind of a fun game. There's not much to it yet. Basically, you can just, like, bring the dragon outside and watch it do things. One more thing I wanted to say about How's the Dragon. I know we're not doing mini-sodes anymore, but something I saw that I was kind of excited about.
I clarify that? We're not never doing mini-sodes. We just have a lot to condense in right now before the next show comes out. So, we'll be back with those eventually. But
we're not doing them between now and the premiere of House of the Dragon, most likely. So I just saw that, you know, we love queer representation here. And I saw that House of the Dragon is one of the first HBO premiere television or premium television series to have a non-binary actor as a leading role. So our Rhaenyra actor, Emma Darcy, identifies as non-binary. The character does
That's
not.
Awesome.
The character's a lady. But Emma Darcy talked a lot in the interview about how a lot of the themes of the show is kind of Rhaenyra exploring gender and the importance of gender.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, she's the first woman to be officially named an heir to the Iron Throne. So
yeah.
big step. So yeah, I just thought that was really cool. We love queer representation here, and I was excited to see that.
Yeah, totally. That's great. Should we jump into this?
Let's do this. We've got a lot of episodes.
Okay, so this is season 7 of Game of Thrones that we're going to be talking about today. I know normally I like to say the names of all the episodes. I'm still going to do that. It is the entire season this time, but just, you know, for consistency's sake. We are covering Dragonstone, Stormborn, The Queen's Justice, The Spoils of War, Eastwatch, Beyond the Wall, and The Dragon and the Wolf. We start this season with Walder Frey talking to all the Freys. We know at the end of the previous season, Arya fed him a pie of his own children and then murdered him. So for a second, we're like, is this a flashback? What is this? But no, it turns out it's fucking Arya wearing his face. It's great. She murders the fuck out of all the rest of the Freys, too. Right off the bat, starting in with some Game of Thrones murder, some, you know, trickery. We love to see it. Arya's murdering everyone, all of her enemies. So, I mean, there's stuff like this and some other things that I'm like, you know, I really appreciate this about season 7. Some of the other stuff pissed me off more now knowing that there was season 8. And I was kind of hoping with this rewatch, I was like, maybe I'll be less pissed off about season 7 and 8. But honestly, no.
Season so far, 7 no. Makes me more pissed off about season 8 because I remember how much I love it. Like, there actually is a lot of fun in this season. Like, especially this opening part. There's a lot of fun in this season. I really enjoyed the romance between Daenerys and Jon Snow the first time around. Now knowing it goes fucking nowhere and it's just stupid for no reason, it's less exciting. But at the time, it was like, oh my God, are they going to have a baby? What's going to happen when she finds out they're related? What if, you know, and there's all these theories of like, what if she gets pregnant before they find out they're related? And like, you know, Jon Snow's not going to have a bastard. I don't know. There were all these theories and they did like absolutely nothing with it. So it makes it less fun this time around. But I did like this season. There's one plot line in particular I think is really fucking stupid. And we'll talk about that when we get there. But for the most part, I liked it.
There's a few things that I will point out that I think are really dumb as we go through this. But yes, overall, I still liked it more than season 5 and definitely more than season 8. So
yes,
it's not the worst.
Had a great cold open for sure. I love how she says, ends it with, tell them winter came for House Frey.
Yes, love that. So we got Bran. This is like peak Bran weirdness in this season because every time anyone talks to him, he's like, I'm the Three-Eyed Raven. And then they go, oh, what's that? And it's like, you fucking knew that they don't know what that is. Just fucking explain it, you weirdo.
He has just become like the worst, like disconnected version of himself.
And he's just always everywhere all the time. Like you come into a room and like Bran is staring off into the distance in the corner. Why is he always there?
He's always, remember those memes? I think it was from season 8, but it's just memes of just like Bran staring you down. Like I forget to, or I, park my car with the gas on E and say, I'm going to go to the gas station in the morning. Me running late the next morning. And it's just Bran staring you down. Fucking Bran. He also like, it explains so many times in this season why he can't hold any titles and has no interest in that.
Yep. He does that
like,
a lot.
Repeatedly. That's kind of his whole arc is like, yeah, I don't really want things anymore.
And also, he kind of gives us somebody who should be King of the Seven Kingdoms, literally his own words.
Yes. I hate it.
Jon and Sansa in this season have a lot of weird struggles, often publicly, which is kind of not cool, and it's always Sansa instigating it. Mm-hmm. So, like, that kind of annoys me because, like, she has, like, done all this learning and stuff from Cersei before, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, why would you have these conversations in front of all your people? I don't know. It's just like, it seems out of sequence for her character development that she would act like this.
It feels similar to Cersei's arc in a way too, where like, it just seems like she's really tired of like her position as a woman, how even after all the ways she's grown, like Jon is still the one who gets to be king, even though she's the trueborn, whatever. But also she does think he's a good king and thinks he should be king. So she's very like back and forth in this. And it doesn't seem like they're portraying it as a conflict in the way that earlier seasons might have. It just seems inconsistent. Like, sometimes she's like, John's great, he's the king. And other times she's like, I should be king, this is stupid.
Yeah, and I feel like there's just, like, I don't know, it feels like they didn't quite flesh out what they were going for behind the writing with this. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I'm going to skip around a bit because I know we have a lot to get through today, but Sansa and Arya have, like, this whole thing this season, which I think starts a little later, but since we're already talking about Sansa, I feel like that whole sequence with Sansa and Arya, which basically lasts this entire season, it was written as if they're like, this is some classic Game of Thrones drama, but then it was, like, not done well because it was, like, too obvious at the very end what happened. They didn't really, I don't know, it just seemed like, oh, we're gonna try to write like George R. R. Martin, but then we don't know how to do that.
It looked like they were trying to trick the viewer. And typically, like, you have some level of intel. Like, in the earlier George R. R. Martin scenes, it's kind of like, you see Tyrion talking to three different people about where who he's going to marry yep. Marcella off to. And you can see the wheels turning. And it's exciting because it's like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Who's he going to catch in the act? Whereas this, it seemed like they're trying to trick you into thinking that Sansa wants to kill Arya, which, like, doesn't make sense for her character that she would want to do that in the first place.
Yeah, because that whole time as that's unfolding, you're like, did they really write this into the fucking show? And then you're like, oh, no, they just... Yeah, it's different from how everything else is portrayed in earlier seasons. And, like, sure, there are some things where, like, it takes us a few seasons to figure out exactly who did what. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing is, like, we're basically meant to feel as if we're Peter Baelish in this situation and, like, see that they're fighting each other. And I don't know, it's very weird.
I like the way that they killed off Peter Baelish. It would have been more exciting if we had some level of knowing, like, oh, they're going to get him, aren't they? You know?
I agree. And yeah, like you said, it's just a little out of place. It doesn't fit with the way the rest of the series unfolds. Back to the first episode of this season, though. So Cersei is on some, like, true bullshit this season. She has painted this giant map of Westeros on the floor because she's like, Jaime, look at, this is all, we're gonna all of this. Just the two of us, all of this.
Why did she paint that map? What does that do?
I don't know. Why is it there?
I think that's my problem with these last two seasons, too. I'm like, oh, this season's fun. But, like, one of the things I don't like is, like, the seasons are shorter, so there's less time, and then they put more time dedicated to, like, dumb shit, like Cersei painting the floor.
Yes, agreed. But yeah, so, like, in this scene, she's talking to Jaime. She's like, do you hate me or are you scared of me? Blah, 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 whatever. Now, it feels to me, and there's been multiple times throughout the series where it kind of feels like this must be Jaime's bullshit tolerance from Cersei. And this time, I was kind of at the beginning of this season, I was like, Is this it? Because he's clearly, like, done with her, and yet they still, like, make out a bunch throughout this season.
Mm-hmm. This season, I feel like, is him kind of figuring out, like, she's kind of all he has left, so he's hanging on, but at the same time, he's just kind of like, what the fuck am I hanging on to? Who else does he have? Like, Tyrion's gone.
He has Tyrion, he has his buddy Bronn, he, you know, like, he has other relationships with other people, like, he but could, like, go find Tyrion's Brienne gone. And make babies together.
That's true.
They're gone, but, like, he could leave, which he does.
He could leave, but which he does eventually, but I think, like, that's hard for him to do. But it just seems like he keeps reminding her, like, he's realizing, like, oh, you're deranged, like, in this season, because he'll try to logic her and try to get her to make smart political decisions, which in the past she had been really fucking good at, and she's just, like, off her rocker.
Right, and now she's like, nothing else matters, it's just us, and he's like, that's not how politics works. He's like, I don't know about politics, but that's not how it works.
And she's like, we're gonna create a dynasty, and he's like, all our kids are dead.
Yeah.
Do you know what? And she goes, I'll create a dynasty of the two of us. That's not what that word means.
A dynasty for whom? And then I was like, they're not on the same page anymore.
No, yeah, I have the same thing. And then my least favorite person shows up, who you
okay, like. Can we talk about how the Ironborn had fucking maybe like a max of, I don't know, 200 people for the last six seasons, and all of a sudden they have two giant-ass navies that are like divided and like, but they're both huge and have a million people? How did this happen?
That's why I'm pissed off about this, because like if the Iron Fleet was strong enough to take on Daenerys in the first place, then they probably wouldn't have lost every rebellion that they've ever tried.
This makes no sense.
Like, the Iron Fleet is, like, one of my biggest issues with the last two seasons, honestly. Because also, when Yara and Theon left, they took all the fucking ships. And then they were like, oh, like, find all the lumber you have. Let's build a new fleet.
Yeah, cut down all the two trees on our rock.
There's no trees on the island. So, like, that would have... And, like, in that time period, they didn't have, like, lumber yards and chainsaws and shit. Like, that would have taken them a good, like 10 years to build a fleet that big? At least 10 years, not, like, 6 months.
I think that's even crazy. Like, they don't have the infrastructure.
Like, and there's not even, like, this is a universe that magic exists in, and they didn't even, like, employ magic. Like, I'll maybe believe, like, maybe dragons can fly super fast, and that's why Daenerys was able to save them. I'm more likely to believe, like, oh, the dragon could make it to the wall in time to save them, because dragons are magic. I don't know how fast dragons fly in real life. Like, I know how long it takes to make ships by hand.
Yeah, a long fucking time.
A long fucking time. Like, I'm so... And they just become this big contender all of a sudden. I fucking hate it.
Okay, and then I am still... I just don't get how you don't see punk rock, emo, black leather pants and eyeliner situation as being hot.
But he's like the fuckboy version of that. He's like the guy that's like...
I'm not saying like I want to settle down with him.
He's like the guy that like hits on you after a show and then asks you to drive and he's crashing on his friend's couch and that's where he wants to hook up with you. That's what he looks like to me. It's not cute.
Anyway, Euron is here with a million ships. And he has some really good lines in this scene when he shows up to talk to Cersei. My favorite was he looks at Jaime with his one hand and he says, "So here I am with 1,000 ships and two good hands," as he's like trying to get Cersei to sex him.
Is this the part where she says if it all blends together?
She basically says, like, he's like, "I want to get married." And she's like, "No, like, win me the war and then maybe we can get married." But basically, he's like, "Okay, I'm going to go get you a gift that will convince you." And that's when he, like, goes to get Yara and Sand Snakes.
I see. That's right.
He never has a shot with Cersei other than, like, not for marriage. He doesn't have a shot with her for marriage, but he is, like, convinced the entire season that he definitely does. He's like, "Yeah, I'm going to convince
her."
She's
fucking her brother, dude.
A lot. Sam, meanwhile, is over at the nerd library.
Soup and poop.
Yeah, I was
like, soup and poop montage.
This is the worst version of a CNA job because, like, he A, isn't getting paid, and B, has medieval medical tools rather than actual modern day hospitals. But basically, yeah, he's just picking up shit. Very soupy shit in bowls
and then
the poop
pouring
bowls.
Soup. Like, it's like soup and poop and soup and poop, and they look the same, and it goes on for way too fucking long.
Way too long! And then
again,
autopsy?
Again, spending time on this shit that we don't... literal shit that we don't need instead of the plot. D&D, what are we doing?
It's literally like a two-minute shit montage.
Yeah, it's just soup and poop for like 2 minutes.
And then Sam, like, sneaks into the restricted area, blah, blah, blah. And then we go to, like, Brienne and Podrick, who are still training, and he still hasn't gotten any better for the last 5 seasons. And then Tormund is there. Gotta love the Brienne and Tormund.
I do love the Brienne and Tormund
relationship. Love it. So he just, Podrick gets knocked the fuck out by Brienne, and he goes, "You're a lucky man."
Best.
He's the best. And then, of course, Peterfile is there, too. We've already talked about the like Sansa and Arya kind of like plot to overthrow Peterfile, but it's very it kind of reminds me of how we felt about Jorah through this entire rewatch. In this particular season, I don't want him here anymore. Every time he's in a scene, I'm just like, go the fuck away. Why are you here? Stop existing. Like, fuck off. That's how I feel.
Fearsome character because he was so conniving and so good and always 10 steps ahead to just becoming like an incel.
Yeah.
Instead, that's just pining over this child. It's not a good look.
That and like we, the audience, have now caught up to everything that he's done, and there's no more like mystery around like, was he a good person? Was he a bad person? Like, he sucks. We know that he sucks now. The thing I don't like about this whole Sansa and Arya trapping Peterfile and his lies, blah, 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 whatever, is that they use his accusation as like, hey, audience, this is all the shit that Peter Baelish did. And like, if you had fucking been paying attention as an audience member, you figured this out already. So it's like, yeah, thanks. Like, we knew. It's a very satisfying scene. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's kind of like, I don't know. It's just not the same as the rest of Game of Thrones, where like you have to pick up on the subtleties and be like, oh my God, that's what happened. It's like, hey, we're going to tell you. It's kind of like they're explaining the plot to us. It's like, yeah, we got
Instead
it.
Instead of showing us. Yeah. Yeah. Because they finally revealed that he was the one who hired the assassin to kill Bran.
But like we've already caught up on all this.
Kind of figured that out. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very done with him this season. He's here. He's watching. He's always doing his creepy whisper. Do you know who else is in this episode, Christine?
Oh, Jorah, the creepy hand.
Wait. No, before that.
Oh, fucking Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran.
Why?
Why is Ed Sheeran here? Yeah, so he's fucking here.
It took me so out of the moment the first time I saw this. We were just like,
and it still does.
Fucking Ed Sheeran.
It's just Ed Sheeran.
Playing Ed Sheeran. Like there's a bunch of celebrity cameos in Game of Thrones, like the archers in the Red Wedding are some of the guys from Coldplay. Some of the guys from Mastodon played Free Folk in the Battle of Castle Black.
But Ed Sheeran is just playing Ed Sheeran.
It's not subtle. It's not a cameo. It's like a fucking like music video scene. Why?
Yeah, more bullshit that doesn't need to be in. Like, they just have Ed Sheeran singing a song.
Singing a song about Jamie fucking his sister.
Yeah, and then they talk a bunch of shit about King's Landing, and Arya's like, yeah, true. And then she says, I'm gonna go kill the queen, and they're like, ha ha ha, and she's like, ha ha ha, but like, really, that's her plan.
But then she, like, changes her mind, and they don't really
talk about that. She does, because she finds out that her family's... I mean, they do, because she finds out from Hot Pie that her family still exists. And her whole, like, reason for why she returned as Arya rather than staying a faceless man was because she remembered that she cared about her family. So that actually, like, makes a lot of sense to me. As soon as she hears the Starks are back in Winterfell, she's like, oh, fuck, I gotta go.
And there's like, the whole symbolism with Nymeria, too, where, like, she finds Nymeria again, and Nymeria is with a pack. Like, she's not a lone wolf. And then Arya doesn't want to be a lone wolf anymore, either.
Yeah.
Also, that part annoys me, because everything annoys me, I guess. But George R. R. Martin has talked about, like, in the books, like, you don't create a giant wolf pack if you're not going to use it. And they never used the giant wolf pack.
They already had Nymeria existing, so they didn't need to have all the other wolf pack there. It just needed to be her.
The wolves should have helped them fight the white ones.
There's a lot of things that were set up and not used.
Yep. That's, I think, why I don't like this season. It was so good the first time because of all the setups, and then they were just like...
Yes.
We kind of forgot about that entire season.
Right. So there's a lot of things in this season that would have been amazing had they used them in season 8, but they don't. There's a lot of stuff with the Hound and the Brotherhood Without Banners that we can kind of skip over, I think. I do like the prayer that he says when he buries the dead guy, though, where he starts, like, praying to the mother, and then he just goes, fuck, I don't remember the rest. Sorry, you're dead.
That's
it's a very houndy prayer.
It's very hound, yes.
How are they just letting Gilly stay with Sam in the Citadel? Why are they fine with this?
They don't explain that either.
They don't. And they've made it clear in previous seasons that it wouldn't be allowed, so.
And even when she got there, they were like, no women and children!
No women!
But now she's there.
But she's just living with Sam.
And the baby.
Who is both a maester and a maestie in training and a Night's Watch boy who are both not allowed to have wives and children. And they're just like, it's fine.
You're not married. It's not his kid. They're just fucking.
They keep saying it is, though. They're telling everyone it's his kid.
Only to his family.
All right. So you wanted to talk about Jorah?
Oh, not really. Just that he was in the season and it's annoying. He has creepy hand come out. And he's
He does a little horror movie moment at Sam for no fucking reason.
Is she here yet? The mother of dragons. Because she fucking is.
Yes, so yeah, then we cut to Dany. She touches Westeros for the first time. Dragonstone is, like, so obviously hers in the scene. Like, very, she matches it, it matches her. I fucking love it. It's a homecoming for sure.
It's so great.
I do have a question about her landing in Dragonstone, though.
Yes.
Now, Dragonstone has been a long-standing major seat of power in Westeros, and they just fucking left it abandoned?
Just Stannis died, and then the...
Yeah, and you think Cersei didn't want to send, like, one person to go sit there and... How easy would it have been?
For, like, 5 minutes. She was too busy fighting the fucking Faith Militant for all that time.
I guess. I don't know. Someone would have taken it. It seems weird. Seems like they forgot.
They could have given it to Bronn. They kept making him do menial tasks.
Like anyone. They could have given it to anyone to get another person on their side. And they were just like, no, let's leave that open. We know this dragon queen is coming. We know she's going to land. They like literally say that they know that's where she's going to land. And they're just like, well, leave
where
it for her.
Where she's like literally from. Was born there. Yeah, I'm surprised they weren't like there trying to attack her when she got there. Because before she had time to gather... she had time to, like, gather allies and, like, build a bigger army and all that shit.
Yeah, seems dumb. But anyway, convenient. And then she, at the end of it, says, shall we begin? Cuts to black. We go into episode 2.
They are also setting her up to be a good queen in this season, is my opinion. Like, I like her queening.
I have mixed. It depends on the scene.
You don't like when she burns the Tarleys. I think it's fine, right? People don't like when she burns the Tarleys.
I agree with Tyrion that she didn't need to burn both of them. And I think it is a good contrast with the Jon Snow scene where he forgives the children of the Karstarks and whatever. And he's like, you're not responsible for the sins of your father. And because he does that, he like sets up those houses to be loyal to him again. And she has the same opportunity, basically. I know he does.
Well, he doesn't. He's like, can you come up? Can you swear fealty to me? She gives him the same option, and he's like, no, fuck you. And it's for, like, racist, xenophobic reasons. Like, they're like, I don't want to fight alongside Unsullied and Dothraki. And she's like, oh, well, you know, you're my people. I'm the queen now. Just bend the knee, you know, swear fealty to my house. And, like, you'll live, and you can keep your seat of power. And he's just like, no, because I'm racist. And she's like, then burn.
Here's the thing, Christine. And I know that Daenerys doesn't know any of this, but I think Dickon actually has like a lot more in common with his mother. Like he seems like a genuinely nice person. Like he's not the dick that his dad is. He definitely is trying to impress his dad as much as Sam ever was and is much more successful at it. But I also think like growing up as a little kid, his dad probably had nothing to do with him because bad dad syndrome. And he probably, like, got a lot of good qualities from his mom. So I genuinely feel bad for him. And he's in this situation with this oppressive father that he's, like, always tried to impress his whole life. So, of course, he's going to be like, yep, I'm going to do what I know my dad would want you to do or would want me to do. So I could kind of see that, like, if his dad had been executed and he was still alive, like, hey, we're going to give you one more shot, like, fucking do it. I know you asked to die, but you're gonna be loyal to it. I don't know.
I just don't think anyone else on this show would have done anything differently.
I don't know. John would have.
But he killed Janos Slynt because Janos Slynt told him no.
Yeah.
Shove your orders up your bastard ass, and he cut his head off.
I don't know.
And he was begging him for mercy.
I still don't think she needed to kill both of them.
And she didn't slaughter the entire army. Like, that to me would be the Mad Queen if she just, like,
yeah, that's
burned
true.
The whole army. She was like, bend the knee, accepted their surrender. Like, the Mad King didn't accept surrenders. He was just like, burn them all.
The other two things in this season that I don't like with her are she's suddenly obsessed with Bend the Knee. She's never been like that before. She's always like gotten people to rally to her side by being inspiring and amazing. And now she's just like, Bend the Knee. The other thing that annoys me is she is much more defensive. Yeah, with her counselors, like, it seems like she gets offended very easily. Like, when Tyrion's talking to her and stuff, she just doesn't seem as willing to take feedback, which she always has been in the past. And she will, like, make her own decisions in the end, but she takes the feedback. And now I feel like Tyrion has to, like, walk on eggshells whenever he talks to her.
That's a fair criticism.
And I don't like that. And it's, like, every time anyone tries to call her out on anything, she, like, gets angry right away. And it's, like, she's never done that before. This isn't... Where did this come from?
Where did this come from? Yeah.
So those are kind of my main two things. And I think, like, yes, the Dickon thing, I could see it going either way, whatever. But those two are, like, character things that don't make sense to me from previous seasons.
Yeah, those don't make sense to me. The, like, the Tarly's thing, I just feel like, was it a good move? Like, no. But was it any different from what anyone else would have done in Westeros? Like, I think Cersei would have, like, burned the whole army.
So, episode two. Speaking of Dany, we start with her, Dragonstone. She has this scene where she's kind of, like, she basically is cross-examining Varys. She's like, you're the one who... She's like, you've worked for my dad, you also worked for Robert, now you're working for me, like, what the fuck is your deal? He goes into his, I work for the common people, blah, blah, blah. I know we've talked about this multiple times, if he's, like, real about that or not. I am more inclined to believe him in this scene than any other, because Varys is very level, and, like, no matter who he's arguing with, he always kind of, like, keeps his cool. And in this scene, for a few seconds, he gets, like, very passionate about his, like, wanting to help the people. And it's the one time you actually see him get, like, a little worked up, which kind of tells me maybe he actually does give a shit. And he also, like, hasn't really done anything differently throughout all these seasons to make me think that that's not necessarily the case.
I don't know, but, like, what is he doing for the people? Like, I feel like that's what he thinks he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to find them the best ruler that will...
But, like, does he talk to anyone?
He's basically trying... He's trying to back the best politician that will make the people the most peaceful and prosperous. He doesn't have a lot of great choices.
Yeah.
Let's say that.
And I think this scene when she's, like, being defensive to Varys was also presented as a Mad Queen thing. But I don't see it that way because she...
I don't either.
...has a read on him. Like, the thing that she said, the minute you disagree with me, are you going to go behind my back and find a better ruler to serve? And that's exactly what he does in the end, which is, you know, bullshit season 8 plot line. But, like, she does have a read on him. So I don't really think in this scene she's being... the Mad Queen. It's what he does. And she's just like, yeah, that's not going to fly with me.
Yeah. And then Bubasandra shows up.
Melodrama.
She actually keeps her shirt on this entire season. I mean, she's not here the whole season.
I know.
She doesn't get naked.
They stopped showing as many nudity scenes by this season. Even the Jon Snow Daenerys sex scene at the end is very chaste.
Yeah, there's a Bronn sex worker scene that I feel like they just added in because they're like, we don't have enough boob. But otherwise, yeah, it's not as racy as some of the other seasons.
I heard the House of the Dragon, they said at Comic-Con, is going to be less nudity and sex than Game of Thrones, that they're moving away from that. But they said there's still going to be rape, which, fuck that, but we'll see.
So... Melisandre has this thing where she's telling Dany that she's, like, here for Azor Ahai or whatever, basically. And then, like, Missandei says that the translation is prince or princess. This is a great piece of foreshadowing that we once again don't use.
Yeah, okay. Why nobody ever fucking talk about Azor Ahai again?
Yeah, why, like, why is this all in here? Why did you include prince or princess if it doesn't amount to anything? Like,
why is Arya supposed to be Azor Ahai? And if she is, why was that never said or expressed?
No, yeah, no, they just forgot.
Do they ever call it Azor Ahai in the show, or is it just the prince that was promised?
No, they don't. Okay. It's just in the books, yeah.
But the prince that was promised is, like, what the prince or princess that was promised is what they call it here.
Yeah, and then they're, like, talking about Nargi Snarg. Dany is already in love with him because she basically just goes, sounds like quite the man. I'd like to meet him.
I think they make him a dick. They make her a dick to Jon Snow so they can set up like an enemies to lovers sexual tension thing. But that's also just like not how she normally is anyway. So she just comes off as a little brat.
Yeah, totally. It's weird. Okay, so back in the Citadel, the Maester there basically tells Jorah that it would be a good time to kill himself. And Sam, meanwhile, is like, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. I'm kind of like, not really worth it, Sam. Jorah kind of sucks.
Fuck
he
Jorah.
Does suck less in this season, I will say.
He
even says later, I had a note later on in one of the later episodes that he like says to Jon Snow, Ned Stark was right to want to execute him. That's the closest he ever gets to admitting that slavery is bad.
Jesus. So like,
that's some character development for him, I guess, because this whole time he's been like really into slaves. So that's as close as we're going to get. But I'm not saying he doesn't suck. I just think he sucks a little bit less in this season. This is also, we already talked about the Arya and Hot Pie reunion, but that is in this episode.
Yeah, we're skipping around a bit today. It's a long season.
We are. There's a lot in this season, and a lot of it is, like, kind of one, you know, each, like, plot line weaves throughout all 8 episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, another amazing scene is in this. Right before Euron captures Yara and Illyria is the scene where they're about to fuck, and they're like,
yes,
about to fuck in front of Theon, and she's like, aren't you supposed to protect her
from foreign
invasion is underway.
That's the closest we got to like an actual consensual lesbian sex scene, and it was interrupted by Euron and his big cock.
Yeah, so like pirate battle, I don't care, whatever. Episode 3, Dany and Narg are finally in
they
the same
meet.
Place. Yes!
Yay! And she's a little brat.
I'm so happy.
And he's kind of adorable.
Yes, and Narg sees his first dragon.
Yeah!
There's a lot of epic scenes of people seeing a dragon for the first time throughout this season, and it's, like, pretty exciting every time because they kind of, like, you kind of can, like, relate to the characters every time they do it, where they, like, are, like, super odd. A lot of them, like, fall to the ground in terror. I don't know. I think they do that well.
They do that well. And there was, like, a scene of it where I think the first time he sees the dragon, he says something about Starks don't do well in, or Tyrion says Starks don't do well in the South. And then he says, I'm not a Stark. And then the dragon flies overhead.
Because he's a Targ.
He's a Targ.
Jon Snargarian. Then she goes on her bend the knee bullshit. John says to her, you don't want to kill thousands of innocent people.
She doesn't.
Because he can tell that about her. Interesting.
It's almost like she doesn't want to do that.
Yeah. So then, like, a lot of things are going bad for Dany here. The whole Casterly Rock nonsense, the Elena Tyrell nonsense. We'll get to the actual meat of that in a minute here, but basically everything is sort of, her whole attack plan that Tyrion came up with is kind of falling apart because Cersei and them all anticipated it and were able to respond, and they just like gave up Casterly Rock, and it's not going well, and she's like finding out about all that here. She's like, what the fuck, maybe I should dragon it up. Jon's like, maybe you should dragon it up, but don't burn everyone.
What I don't understand in this, and explain this to me if you're not confused about the same thing. So they keep talking about that the only options are to burn King's Landing to a crisp or to not go to King's Landing. Yet in the final season, when she does go with one dragon, they surrender immediately. Why doesn't she take all the dragons directly to the Red Keep? Like, if you look at a map, like, the Red Keep is, like, on its own pedestal, like, far away from all the people. She could just attack the Red Keep and the Red Keep only and just, like, win the war immediately. Like, no one's on Cersei's side. She doesn't have a great house backing her. Like, literally, all you have to do is kill Cersei.
That's all you need to do is kill Cersei.
That's it. Like, I don't understand why. And they keep being, like, don't go to King's Landing, don't go to King's Landing. And it's like, yeah, she does not need to launch, like, a nuclear attack and burn all of the city. All she needs to do is go and, like, threaten Cersei and maybe kill Cersei. Like, feed Cersei to the dragon.
Yeah, seriously.
I never understood, like, nobody suggests that ever. And even when she asks Jon Snow for advice, he's not like, Yeah, maybe just kill Cersei.
Yeah, it's kind of like the, why didn't they use the eagles to fly into Mordor situation.
Yes, it's kind of like that.
Speaking of Cersei, though, she doesn't care anymore that everyone knows she fucks her brother. She's like, I'm the queen and I fuck my brother, hi. And then also, they have a big spoiler here for House of the Dragon. So if you watched Game of Thrones, you heard this, but I'm about to remind you, so if you really don't want any House of the Dragon spoilers, maybe skip forward 30 seconds. But they say here that Cersei is the first ruling queen of the Seven Kingdoms. Wonder what's going to happen in House of the Dragon. There's the whole thing with Cersei paying back the Iron Bank. Obviously, she has to take all the Tyrell gold for that.
Oh, Bran comes home and is creepy as fuck. We talked about him being creepy before, but he's creepier now because he's like, explains why he can't rule and he doesn't want things anymore. And then talks about how he saw Sansa being raped. In like the creepiest way possible.
It's so creepy. And my note before that scene even, the scene where he walks in the door, my note says, Bran is here. Hello, Sansa, said the robot tree.
Robot tree.
He's like fucking weird as fuck. He's so weird. I hate it. But yeah, he says that he needs to talk to Jon and tell him things. And then, yeah, he has that weird-ass conversation with Sansa that didn't fucking need to be in the show.
Nope, another thing we didn't need.
Didn't need that. Nobody asked for this. And, like, of all the things to be like, hey, let me demonstrate how I can see everywhere and all at once. Pick something else.
Everything everywhere all at once. Yeah, maybe not that.
Pick anything else.
Maybe like, oh, the way that you watch Ramsay die was awesome and brutal. You're cool. That's also not a good example, but at least it's not.
I don't know. Anything else.
I guess there's nothing good he can really say about what's happened to Sansa.
But yeah, the way that he...
It's just not necessary. You looked so beautiful in your white wedding dress. Snow was coming down.
And she's like, I need to leave now. Bye.
Bye forever. Bran's weird now. Yeah, this is when they take Casterly Rock, and then the Lannisters take...
Real quick aside, back in the Citadel before that, I do like the when the Maester is examining Jorah, and he's, like, trying not to throw Sam under the bus. He's like, I just started feeling better. I assume it was the rest and the climate?
Climate.
That's a good scene.
That is a good scene.
And the Maester's like, okay, I don't believe you. And then he's like, Sam, how did you do it? And he's like, I read it in a book. Of course. But yes, Casterly Rock. And then we finish that episode out with the Jaime and Olenna scene.
Oh, so good.
So good. This was one of the bigger, like, dramatic reveals of things that had been a mystery or, like, at least unclear in the past, where Olenna finally admits that she is Joffrey's murderer. She's admitted it before,
yeah,
like, more cryptically.
Again, we kind of knew, but Jaime didn't.
Yes, but she gets to reveal it to Jaime. This is well done. This is different from the Peter File one later.
Yeah, this is very well done.
It's just like, I want Cersei to know it was me. Fucking love this. It's her last great Olenna moment, and we love her for it. Episode 4. Shall we dive in?
Let's do it.
For some reason, the cat's paw dagger is given to Bran. Go away, Peter File. And then Bran says to him, chaos is a ladder.
See, I feel like Bran's whole thing in this season is just saying creepy shit to people that he shouldn't know and then not explaining why he knows it.
Yep, that's
his
whole thing.
He's just trolling people.
So fucking weird. He says creepy shit to people that he shouldn't know, and then he says that he shouldn't have a title.
Yeah, hell, he's not Bran Stark anymore. He can't be Lord. He can't have any titles. He's the Three-Eyed Raven now. He doesn't want anymore.
Fucking weird. When Arya shows up and they, like, have the reunion with Sansa, great stuff, blah, blah, blah. Then Sansa goes, Bran's home too, but he's a fucking weirdo now. Like, you can definitely, hear the unsaid line there and, like, see it in their eyes.
But...
She's like, but he's kind of fucking weird. So that's a good one. I There are some good Bran moments because of him knowing everything in terms of, like, he knows Arya is an assassin, so he's like, the cat's paw digger, you're the one who, like, will use this. So there are some things like that. You know, he helps in the Peter Baelish situation later. Like, there's some good things that come out of Bran being able to see everything. So, like,
yeah, just his personality sucks.
Yes. So, all right, there's a lot of convenient things in this season. One of them is the convenient, not only just, like, some random Children of the Forest drawings happen to be underneath Dragonstone, but they are drawings of everyone fighting against the White Walkers, and Jon Snow just happens to find them when he's trying to convince Dany to do this, so that's very convenient.
Very convenient, but I love this scene. I like, it's, we start to hear a little bit more of the first time. I love the Daenerys and Jon Snow love theme. It's one of my favorite scores. Is that the term from the show?
Yeah.
One of my favorite scores from the show, is their love theme. I like I saw an episode where Rama Djawadi was talking about it, and he basically used two notes. Like, so I forget what the notes are, so I'm not even going to try to say it. But at the beginning of Daenerys and Khal Drogo's love theme, there's a droning note. The beginning of Ygritte and Jon Snow's love theme, there's a droning note. And then this one incorporates both of those together. And it's, like, much more sad and slow. It's very, like, feels like this.
Yeah.
It's this song of, you know, kind of desperation of two broken people coming together. And I think it's beautiful. I don't really think their relationship is beautiful, but I like the song and I like what he was trying to create with that. I don't like the way the relationship is done, obviously. But, like, yeah. It looks like it was leading up to something good in this. Yeah, so I think that's why I like the cave scene. And I also thought they were going to bone because Jon Snow likes to fucking caves.
I do really love the scenes where Sansa, like, begins to understand what the fuck Arya is. It's, like, she's spent quite a bit of time with Brienne now. Like, Brienne has fucking saved her life. And then Sansa starts sparring with her and Arya starts sparring with her and Sansa's watching and it's like, Arya's really fucking good. And then, of course, that whole sequence ends by Brienne asking, who taught you that? And she goes, no one.
I love that so much.
Yes. And we get it as the audience, but it sounds like a regular no one to her. Then there's the Jon and Theon reunion that no one asked for.
Nobody wants
at
that.
Dragonstone. I don't care about it. Randall Tarly, meanwhile, is talking about how they should flog people because that sounds like something he would be into.
See, he sucks. I don't care that he got burned. He's the worst. And there's Dickon. It's the guy from Umbrella Academy, too, I realized watching this again.
The scorpion comes out at this battle.
This battle scene is so good. I remember how anxious I was watching it the first time.
Exactly.
Because of, like, oh, and there's, like, people you care about on both sides. So you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Is Dany going to get knocked off the dragon? Is the dragon going to be okay? Is Jaime going to get burnt? Is Bronn going to get burnt?
Yes. The entire battle is very stressful. They leave the episode off with us not knowing if Jaime has died. I mean, you kind of can tell he's alive, but...
And the cinematography and the music in this episode and this, like, battle scene are really good, too. All right. Oh, shouldn't Dany be wearing armor? I was thinking about that. She's just riding into battle in, like, a little dress on her dragon.
Like, yeah, what the fuck?
And it was right after, like, Tyrion had said something to her. Like, it would just take one arrow
you can still
to
get
take
arrow.
You out.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I'm just gonna wear this, like, cute little Targaryen dress and hang out on my dragon. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what the fuck? So, episode 5, Jaime's still alive. Tyrion, meanwhile, does think that he just watched his brother die because he has no way of knowing from where he was standing. So that's very sad for Tyrion. He's trying to wrangle his emotions because his side just won, but also...
Like, that was the Lannister army, too, that got destroyed, and he had been commanding the Lannister army for years.
Yes, so lots of high emotion for him, and then the whole execution.
Yeah, but then we're on to the next episode with the execution.
Yes, and then Jaime, meanwhile, is, like, telling Cersei that she's fucked and she doesn't care. So, like, why would you make two mad queens? Why?
Why would you make two mad queens?
Pick one.
Dany comes home and my note says, Snargy, gonna snarg a big dog.
Yes. In other words, Christina's trying to say that Jon Snow touches a dragon's face.
Yes. Snarky gonna snark big dark.
My note, on the other hand, was like, Drogon is like, blood of my blood.
Blood of my blood.
Because he's related, get it? Because he's also blood
Are
of the dragon.
Are they like cousins?
Something like that. My next note is, no more Jorah, do not want.
Oh, fuck Jorah. Oh, before then was when John's, Daenerys goes, they're beautiful, aren't they? And then Jon Snow goes, wasn't the word I was thinking, but. And she gives him this look that's just like, do not talk shit about my kids. It's like when, like,
but yeah, that works
like,
too.
When people are like rude about your dog. Like, I don't have a dog right now. You know, people like make fun of your dog and you're like, you're not allowed to say that. I can't fuck you. And then Jorah shows up to Cockblock and she's like, he is my friend. Fuck that. No friends with Jorah.
Hate Jorah.
Ooh. And then they hatch a stupid plan. That is my least favorite thing about this season. The stupid plan to bring a stupid zombie to stupid Cersei.
So dumb.
So dumb. It just, it's ridiculous. Like, let's go bring a, it's fucking ridiculous. I don't even have words for it. And like,
Cersei was never gonna come.
And also, like, let's go to the north, which, like, in another season, that would have taken two whole seasons to get there. And this one, it takes, like, half an episode. But, like, they're gonna go up there and, like, put themselves at risk to, like, kidnap a zombie so they can convince Cersei. Why doesn't she just go burn Cersei?
I don't know. It's all done.
Instead of asking for a fucking truce. I put they needed camera phones in my notes, though. Check it out. Look at this video of a zombie.
I know. I was like, there has to be an easier way. But no, they don't have technology. I have another note here that just says, well, fuck me. Look who made it off the boat. It's Gendry, you guys. Gendry's back.
Gendry.
He's been paddling around on a boat for multiple seasons, but we found him again. And of course, they have Davos actually make that joke by saying, thought you might still be rowing.
I love, see, this season got weird, and next got weird, because I feel like they started responding to the memes.
Yeah, they're self-aware.
Like, I also feel like they played up the Tormund and Brienne thing, too. Like, I think it was originally just kind of like, they were making eyes at each other, and then they made him start talking about it more, and then they put a whole thing about it in the next season.
Talks about how he wants to have babies with her.
Yeah, I feel like it was because fans loved that so much. They kept playing with it.
To be honest, the season where, or the, yes, the episode where he's talking about that when they're beyond the wall, all of his lines about it are hilarious.
But somebody's gotta write, like, a sociological paper about, like, how, like, art starts responding to memes. Like, you know, like, the show makes the memes, and then the memes makes the show. Cersei says she's pregnant.
Yep, I was gonna say, my next note is, Cersei says my ego is prego.
Ego is preg. She's preganinant. She's pregnant.
You guys, if you haven't seen the preganinant video on YouTube, please go.
I think it's called How Is Pegnat formed? Is that what?
Pegnate.
Pegnate
Something
formed.
Like that. Just misspell pregnant and search video and it will come up.
Yes. I thought she was faking Pregante for, like, I really think she's faking Pregante, Pegnat, but we never find out.
We never find out.
I don't think there's a baby.
Yeah, and then, we've got another R plus L equals J development here, where Gilly reveals something from a book. It seems in this instance that Sam is not listening and doesn't understand how important this is, though he recalls it perfectly later, so I guess
And then he goes into angst mode. Listen to your girlfriend, Sam!
And then he drops out of school and steals a bunch of books. And leaves, so that's cool.
Goes off the rails.
Anything else? I guess that's kind of the end.
That's kind of the end of the episode, yeah. Okay, episode 6. I want to call out some assholes who spoiled this episode for me back in the day when it first came out, 2017. You know who you are. They're not listening to this. Fuck these guys. They were like med students at the hospital that I was interning at the time. And this episode got leaked. And they were like, we would always talk about Game of Thrones. They're like, did you watch the leak? And I was like, no, I didn't watch the leak because I have like specific people that come over to like drink and watch Game of Thrones with me and eat taco dip. on Sunday nights. And they were like, oh, it's a really good one, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you better not give me any spoilers. And they
did
were...
Did they spoil it for you?
They did. And they were like, blah, blah. And I was like, if you have any spoilers, I have three dragons. I'm going to fly to your house. He goes, you sure you got three? Are you sure about that? And then they burst out laughing. And I was like, are you telling me a fucking dragon dies? And they're like, we didn't tell you anything. Fuck them. That ruined my week. And then I felt like such a baby about it because it really bothered me. But I'm like, this is the only thing that gives me joy is watching this stupid show. Because at the time I was making no money, working like a bad internship, way too many hours. And so a dragon dies in this episode. Spoilers.
We told you guys there were spoilers. So at the beginning of this episode, we're beyond the wall with what I like to call the boy band. It's the Hound, it's Gendry, it's Jon Snow, it's the Brotherhood Without Banners.
The boy band, I love it.
They're a boy band that I don't want,
they're not the
but
boy
they
band
are one.
That we asked for, but they're the boy band that we deserve.
Oh yeah, and Jorah and Tormund.
Because Jorah's there, but some of these conversations are really good. Like Tormund and Jon talking about basically why Jon hasn't bent the knee to Daenerys, and he's like talking about how, you know, he's the king in the north, and like the Northernmen chose him, and blah, 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 and then Tormund is like, oh, you're proud. Like, Mance Rayder was a proud man. He would never bend the knee. How many of us had to die for his pride? Which is kind of the first time we've heard that narrative of, instead of, like, they always, like, very much respected Mance Rayder for never bending the knee, and now he's...
Well, and I think they just couldn't handle it happening twice, because, like, Jon is now the main person that they kind of
that makes
all
sense.
Look up to.
Yeah.
He's, like, a big leadership figure for them, and that would... not be okay for them to have to go through that another time. So, like, they need something different this time. And I think it's, like, been long enough that they can kind of reflect on, like, yeah, we liked that at the time, that he stood up for not bending the knee, but also...
Yeah, like, now just keep us alive, and if you can get us... Yeah, I think at this point he's just kind of like, if all you have to do is bend the knee and she's going to show up with an army and dragons, like, we kind of need that. We're all going to die.
Yeah.
I love these conversations, though. Like, we talked a little bit about Jorah and Jon Snow talking... they imply again here that, like, that him and Daenerys are going to have a baby. Because he gives him the sword and says, oh, for your children after you. And it kind of, like, felt like he knows he's going to die, but he wants her to be happy and blah, blah. Like, he can tell. I don't know. There's a lot of, like, even if it's not with Daenerys, like, they imply that Jon Snow is going to have a baby, which he doesn't.
Right. So there's just, like, a lot of unused foreshadowing, as we've already said multiple times. Why are the White Walkers afraid of water?
I don't know. They don't explain it. I was going to talk about how Tormund doesn't know what a dick is, but this is more important.
Dick. Cock.
Dick.
Dick. I like that word.
I'm sure you do.
I bet you do.
Yeah, why are the White Walkers afraid of water? They never explain that.
They don't. It doesn't really add up. It seems like they'd be fine going in water.
And then at the end of this episode, they're pulling the dragon out of the water with chains. Who attached those chains?
Yeah! What the fuck? How did they get in there if they can't go in water? I've never actually noticed that plot hole before.
I did get that from the internet back in the day. But it's really dumb, right?
That's really dumb. Thoros dies, so we know Beric Dondarrion is no longer coming back to life after this. Another issue I have with Tyrion in this season, I know I've talked about, like, Dany being, like, all defensive whenever he tries to give counsel, but, like, some of his counsel is stupid because it's like, don't use your dragons. Every time she tries to go ride her dragon, he's like, don't do that, it's too risky. And it's like, yeah, dude, no risk, no reward. Like,
no, he's, like, not giving her good counsel in this. Like, he's getting played.
Yeah, so don't love that. Dany decides she's done listening to him, though, and goes to rescue the Brotherhood Without Banners and Narg and
the
everyone
boy
else
band.
Up there.
But not before they once again imply that she's going to have a baby or something about that, because he wants to know who becomes king or queen after she dies and what's the line of succession going to be. And which makes sense, because they've built this whole movement, and then if she just, like, dies in battle, then what happens to everybody else? Like, there needs to be someone else. And she's like, after the war is won, we'll discuss the succession, which again implies, like, maybe there'll be a baby. I don't know. Just the fact that they're talking about it so much, like the fact that they keep talking about the fact that she can't have children so much, and the way that the show usually goes, like at the beginning of this season when the maester says, the wall has stood through it all. And, like, the wall's coming down by the end of the season. Like, that's just, like, how the writing usually
exactly.
is.
Exactly. You talk about it because you're going to do something with it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So she goes to save all the guys, the boy band. The Night King gets her dragon. I don't really want to talk about it. It just makes me sad and mad.
Yeah,
and
very sad. His neck explodes. It's awful. Her face in that scene is just, like, shocked and ridiculous.
She also leaves Narg to die.
Well, he tells her to.
And he does, and she, like, that's the move. Like, that's what she should do there, because she's, otherwise, everyone else is gonna die. She's gonna die. Her other dragon's gonna die.
It's so cute when she first lands there. Like, she puts her hand down to, like, get him. Like, she's like, I'm here! And then he just goes back and keeps fighting people. And then he can't get back to the dragon in time, and he knows that the Night King's gonna throw a javelin. So he goes, go, leave! So she does. And then she's very sad, just waiting at the tower for him to come forever.
Yes. And then conveniently again, Benjen is just there.
Yeah. Uncle Benjen!
Okay. Where did you come from?
He's why magic. Now? So, like I said, the shit that
But why didn't he show up 20 fucking minutes ago?
He's not magic enough. I don't know. There's no explanation.
There's no explanation. And, like, this is what I'm talking about. Once we lose the Gurm writing, there's a lot of just like, well, this is the convenient way out of this. Like, no, characters used to have to, like, figure it out themselves. And now it's just like, oops, accidentally, we're in the same place at the same time. Let me fix this for you.
I think the way that, like, Gurm is writing, we've talked about this before, is he's trying to figure out what the character would do. And that's why he keeps getting stuck. Whereas the showrunners were more just like, well, we got to get Jon Snow out of here. What can we do? Uncle Benjen.
So anyway, then I have this note that says, now Jon Snow is Gandalf.
Now he's Jon Snow the White. He's like half dead on the horse.
Dany's all excited that he's back. She's slightly hot and bothered.
A little bit.
He's very sorry that her BB died.
Yeah, and then the scene where he's in bed and she's like holding his hand. It's very cute. Yeah, I do like this.
Like, he wakes up from a coma basically and is like, I'm sorry about your children. That's the first thing he says. Oh, love it. And then he says that he will bend the knee.
But only after. And I think what I like about this is she agrees to, like, she's like, we're going to fight them together. Like, she's now on his side, but without him bending the knee.
Yeah, it's
and
very mutual.
He does almost because of that. Because, like, it was like she was proving her worth that she was going to do it anyway. And that's why he bent the knee. And it feels very like two equals coming together. And then she talks about how they're going to take the boat. Is that in this episode where they talk about how they're going to get to King's Landing the next episode? And they say they're going to take the boat together and arrive as... Oh, no. Nope. I lied. That's at the end of the next episode when they go to Winterfell. Never mind. Because when they go to King's Landing, she rides the dragon separately to be a badass.
This episode ends terribly, which is with Ice Dragon, Wallfall.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, it's not with Wallfall. That's later, but it's with Ice Dragon.
Oh, this is just it's the Ice
when they
Dragon.
This is when they pull him out
they
of the lake.
They pull him out of the lake with the chiefs. I was going to say, I thought the Ice Dragon was at the very end.
Yeah. Then we have episode 7, which is the meetings episode.
Ugh, this plotline's so stupid.
This episode is all meetings.
All meetings.
And this is the end of the season, and it's all meetings.
All meetings, but... I put this scene is so dumb and then didn't write anything until the end when they reveal. Like, that's the only notes I have.
They go to the dragon pit. There's a quick Podrick's magic cock reference from Bronn. Boring meeting. Euron is fucking embarrassing to Cersei.
Yeah, and she tells him to sit down.
Narg fucks it all up by saying that he's not going to bend the knee to Cersei.
It would have made more sense with Euron if he, when he fucks off, when he's like, I'm afraid of that, I'm going to go back to the Iron Islands where I'm safe because they can't swim. If that would, like, if then in the next season he comes back, like, more powerful than ever, which is fucking stupid. Like, I think it would make more sense for his character to just, like, actually fuck off and just be like, this isn't beneficial to me anymore, I'm leaving.
Well, he's also crazy and not smart. So.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, like, that made sense to me. And then when he reappears next season, I'm just like, what the fuck's this guy doing back?
Yeah. And then Cersei and Tyrion chat, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The biggest piece of foreshadowing of all, we've already talked about this, but this is the scene where Jon says to Dany, who told you you couldn't have children? The witch that killed my husband. And then he says, Has it occurred to you she might not have been the most reliable source of information?
Yeah, maybe.
Why do you have this, like, very blatant line of, hey, Danny probably can have children, and then not do anything with it? What the fuck?
Why, in the same episode where they fuck?
Yeah, what the fuck?
I always thought that the Targs were a hybrid species because somebody fucked a dragon, and therefore the reason she couldn't have children was because she wasn't with another dragon, and she actually could have a baby with him.
Yes, we've talked about this at length.
This is incest and it's gross, whatever, but, like, somebody fucked a dragon.
Somebody fucked a dragon.
Also, like, it wasn't super incest in that time period. Like, up until, I'm not, like, saying incest is cool, but I'm just saying, like, up until maybe, like, 100 years ago, like, cousins and nieces and nephews marrying were not considered incest, and it was, like, standard practice. And I think in the books, like, Tywin and his wife were cousins, and that was normal.
Yeah, it was literally just, like, the Cersei Jaime type thing. Yeah, that was not really cool.
So, like, what was considered incest in, like, the time period that this is supposed to resemble was, like, brother and sister and mother and father. Like, it probably wouldn't have bothered these two characters that they were related, is what I'm saying, but it bothers us, because, like, who wants to fuck their aunt? Not me.
So then Cersei comes and tells a big lie about how she's in. Theon and Narg have this big conversation, the outcome of which is Jon says that you're a Starkjoy.
Starkjoy!
He's like, you are a Greyjoy, and you are a Stark. And I'm like, he's a Starkjoy.
Just like he's a Snargy Narg.
Theon finally gets a scene where he gets respect of the Ironborn. Mainly it comes because he realizes that it's a good way to take people out by hitting them in the dick, and that no one can do it to him.
That's hilarious.
So he uses his weakness as a strength. I'm here for it, actually.
And they go to save Yara.
Because, like, he's been downtrodden over and over and over and over again for the last multiple seasons, and finally, like, he gets a moment, and then he gets to, like, go get a sister.
Yeah.
This is the Lord Baelish scene where they read out this whole accusation and then turn at the end and say, how do you respond to these charges, Lord Baelish? This is the one we've talked about this kind of throughout this, but, like, Sansa and Arya have been pretending to plot against each other and, like, be in this fight, and then basically it was all just to catch Baelish and his plots, and it's just, like, a little too on the nose, this whole scenario. I get what they were trying to do, and I just don't think they did it well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Though, this scene, again, very satisfying.
This scene's good. Everything leading up to it was just, like, fucking annoying.
Yeah. But yeah, he finally dies. This is one of the more satisfying deaths of the show. Also, this is another one where Bran's stupid knowledge comes in handy.
Oh, yes.
Because he starts to, like, defend himself and be like, none of you were there. None of you saw what happened. And Bran's like,
hi. This is exactly what happened. Here's exactly what you said.
And then my note for when his throat gets slit is just, Peter, bye, Lish.
Bye, Lish.
Bye forever. It's not really that funny, actually.
I thought it was funny.
Back in King's Landing, finally, after the whole season, Jaime's last straw, we found it. It is Cersei trying to break her promise to go fight against the dead. And Jaime's like, you gotta take this one seriously.
You saw what she's like, we saw, right? Like, there's zombies coming to kill us all.
She's like, no one matters but you and me. And he's like, no, that's not true.
And she goes, like, nobody walks away from me. And he's like, I do.
Yeah. Then Sam and Bran discover R plus L equals J.
Yes, we get an R plus L equals J, which we knew that R plus L equals J, but he's not a bastard. He is, like, a trueborn Targaryen because they were married.
Yeah, because Bran is like, he's not a snow, he's a sand. And then Sam's like, no, he's not a sand, he's a Targ. And we're all like,
yay!
Woo!
Yay, yay, yay!
R plus L equals J.
Woo! Your girl loves a secret wedding. It's good shit. And then Bran reveals that he's the heir to the Iron Throne right about. And it's like,
this, of course, is all overlaid with Jon and Danny fucking.
It says he loved her and she loved him. And when he says he loved her, he didn't rape her. She wasn't kidnapped. He loved her. And then they show Jon Snow knocking on the door. And then, and she loved him. And then Daenerys opens the door. And then the next scene you see, they're like rolling around in bed together. You see Jon Snow's butt for a minute. I wanted to see more of how that went down, like the conversation that led up to that. Like once he went in the room, like what they said to each other and then being vulnerable with
just
each
like
other.
Like how that started.
Yeah, yeah. Like I don't necessarily wanted to see more sex, but I just wanted to see more like intimacy.
The transition
between
from walking into the room to fucking.
Yeah. Like I felt like we'd been leading up to that for 7 seasons and we got just like a short montage scene. And I was just like, yeah. What the fuck? And earlier, like we got like full sex to positioning with just like sex workers and we don't get like this nice scene. Anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, they have these two scenes happening simultaneously, John and Danny getting together and then Sam and Bran figuring out who John is. It's like very dramatic. It's a very big culmination of a lot of things. The music is super intense. So why make it so important if no one cares in the end that he's a Targaryen?
Nobody cares that he's a Targaryen. Their relationship kind of like fizzles out. Like we'll talk about that next season, but you know what I mean? It's not like they don't really have a huge blow up either.
I do want to talk about one more thing in this episode. That's kind of small, but it's like the scene where Sansa and Arya have like this conversation about like Arya being the executioner and Sansa being the one to like pass the sentence. And this is like a very big callback to like season one, and we've seen it throughout with the Starks, where it's like the one who passes the sentence should swing the sword. And I love that like Sansa and Arya, like neither of them are both of those things,
mm-hmm.
but they can do it together and they're like this powerful force as like working as a tag team. And it's very like, we are still Stark. We're just like doing all of this. I'll take this side of it. You take that side of it. We're a team.
Cause they talk about like the wolf pack metaphor again, because that's when Arya yeah. came home to rejoin her family was after she saw that Nymeria had a pack and she wanted one too. And they like kind of talk about that, but like the lone wolf won't survive the winter, but the pack survives.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And it's like, yes, we as the packs swing the sentence and pass the sword, but it's not necessarily the same as it was with Ned doing all of that.
Yeah. And they both
learned very much love this scene.
Different things from him. And like, cause Arya talks about like, you were always going to be the lady. So I had to become something different and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I wouldn't have survived what you did. And neither of them would have survived what the other did. Like, they're very different people.
And, I mean, Sansa also has the line of, she's like, you would have survived. Which I think is true. Like, they both could have. It would have turned out differently for, like, their stories would have been very different. So, of course, this episode and season ends with the dead come, the ice dragon come, and bye-bye wall.
Bye-bye wall.
Christine, I think you wanted to pull a couple people into Psychology Corner. Can we do that?
Yeah. All right. I wanted to pull in Daenerys and Sansa for a little group. As I just wanted to talk about post-traumatic growth because I think both of them are two completely different, really good examples of this. I'd love to like do a essay on this at some point or something. So post-traumatic growth comes in like what that means is post-traumatic growth is when someone has experienced a trauma and develops PTSD and then coming out of that is able to take new meaning from their experiences and live their lives in a different way than they did prior to the trauma and, you know, show growth. So it's kind of exactly what it sounds like. It doesn't happen to everyone, which is why it's sort of a controversial topic in a way, because just because you experience trauma doesn't mean you can or should or will experience post-traumatic growth. But for some people, this is what happens. And I think Sansa and Daenerys are a really nice example of that in different ways. So I think Daenerys talks a lot about in her conversation with Jon Snow, like everything that's happened to her and how she's able to find faith. And it was just so much like her family was torn from her. She was able to create her own family. Like she was kind of very powerless. We see her in season one. She was raped. She lost her husband. She lost her baby. She's just lost so much, lost her brother in a way, even though he was trash. Meanwhile, she's grown. She's kind of become this resilient person. She's become this queen, which is why I kind of hate the ending of her too. I don't have a lot to say about this topic today, but that's why I kind of hate the ending of her too, where it just kind of reduces all of that post-traumatic growth down to, and I guess I can come back into this when we talk about next season, but like it just seems like it all comes down to genetics in the end. Like, oh, she's a Targaryen. But when really, like, what we've seen throughout this has been this intense growth period. So she almost feels like a more fantasied version of post-traumatic growth, where she just became this, you know, superhero as a result of this bad thing that happened to her. Not as a result, but in spite of. Sansa feels like a more realistic version of this, like more
that makes
like
sense.
A real patient would look like who experiences post-traumatic growth, where, you know, we've seen everything that Sansa's gone through. We've seen her struggle with PTSD. We've seen her struggle with anxiety and fear. And, you know, she talks about having physical symptoms as a result of that. And what we see in this season is her becoming a really good ruler and her just like embodying herself and her own persona in a way that she really wasn't in other seasons, right?
Yeah. And I feel like she has gotten to this place where she's very consciously making decisions about, like, these are the things I'm going to take with me from my past, and these are the things I'm just going to overcome and move on from. And she's like, she even has this line about, like, how she learned a lot from Cersei, and, like, she knows that, like, that was one of the shittiest times of her life, but she's still like, I'm going to take these pieces of it that I can use to build, like, a new, better myself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we see that with Daenerys, too. I just don't think it was written as well. Like, because I think they were trying to push this Mad Queen plot.
Yeah, they definitely were starting to put that in season seven. There's, like, it's a little weird in season seven, because they're definitely, like, still building on some of the stuff with Daenerys from previous seasons, where she's, like, learning from other stuff she's been through. She's, you know, like you were saying, growing stronger in spite of all the shit that she's had happen to her. Also, they're pulling in this, like, beginning of Mad Queen. So it's, like, very, these two, like, juxtaposized.
I know.
Why can't I say that word?
I don't know.
Juxtapositioned
that sense of that, yeah.
Versions of herself. Yes. And
yeah. So it's a bit confusing.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem like they quite had it down what they were going for. And it's not really, it's not even like a gray area of character. I don't think it just doesn't make sense, but I do think she is a good example, like you're saying, because she's had the biggest growth of anybody on this show from season one to season seven. And she has also gone through so much. She's gone through so much adversity and, like, grown in spite of it, and has become, like, this very confident and goal-oriented person. And she says in this season, like, I believe in myself.
Yes.
Like, that's who I have faith in. And that, I think, is, like, this, like you said, a really good example of this, because she, like, has learned, I can't necessarily rely on other people, but I can rely on me, and I'm gonna grow stronger as a person. Like, I can't have any external things that I know are gonna be there or aren't gonna be there. And I think that's part of why, like, yes, she's sad when the dragon dies, but she's, like, very much able to continue her life and continue to move on, because she knows, like, I can't control these.
Which
other
was surprising in a way, like, that she didn't totally lose her shit, but she was, like, prepared for loss in a healthy way. And I think the goal typically of trauma treatment, like, I don't like, and sometimes this show does that, and that's why I'm trying to give a different perspective a little bit. Like, I don't like when the narrative is like, oh, I'm glad that this bad thing happened to me because that's why I became who I am now. Like, it's not that. It's not Spider-Man, a radioactive spider bit you and now you have superpowers, but it's more along the lines of, like, the goal of trauma treatment is to be able to, like, incorporate and integrate your trauma into your life story. So instead of being stuck back in this one life event and not be able to move forward, which is a lot of what we see with Theon throughout the show, understandably, which is, like, a lot of what PTSD is at the end of the day, is you're stuck in this event and you're not able to move forward. And the treatment isn't to not feel that pain anymore, to not, you know, still experience mourning, still experience anger, you know, resentment, pain. It's to incorporate that into your life story and to have what happened before, what happened after, all be, you know, a consistent narrative, and to be able to, like, integrate that and feel like a full person. And I think we really see that in this season between Daenerys and Sansa both. And I just think it's, like, a really good example of post-traumatic growth. So I wanted to chat about that a little bit.
Well, thanks for Psychology Corner.
Of course.
I feel like we hadn't done that for a little while, yeah. So I'm glad we brought it back. I also think we need to just wrap up with a quick round of Fuck, Marry, or Kill.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Do you have any?
I do. And I think this one's very easy. The queens of the season, Cersei, Yara, and Dany.
Ooh, okay. Kill Cersei, marry Dany, fuck Yara.
Told you it was easy.
It's easy.
I agree.
I'm going to go with boy band members, but I'm trying to think of who.
Oh,
so let's do the Hound, Gendry, Tormund.
Oh, that's a tough one. Okay. Damn it. I don't want to kill any
right?
of them. So, okay. Who's the most marriageable? Probably Tormund. Yeah. Okay. Tormund's the Mary. So then I guess I want to fuck Gendry for this one, so I'll kill the Hound.
Sorry, Hound. But I think that's
sorry,
the
Hound.
Correct answer.
I'm pretty sure I've picked the Hound for, like, Mary before in other versions, but in this version, you axed. I was trying to think of three that were, like, insane. This is what I came up with, which was two really insane people and one just, like, insane in a different way person. Again, Cersei's in this again. Cersei, Euron, Peter Baelish.
Definitely kill Peter Baelish. They're all fuckable, but not marriage. I mean, the two that are left are fuckable, but not marriageable. Guess I'll marry Cersei and fuck Euron.
It's the pirate eyeliner. So what do you got going on? Anything you want to plug, Christine?
Nothing. But you can follow my bands, as always, at Chaos Pixie NYC and at Hard Cider Music.
Awesome. And you can follow me at @low_Mazzy on Instagram. And I'm going to plug Athletic Brewing. Today I'm drinking the Pilot Program Carabunga Ginger Sour, which is a delicious sour beer from their pilot program, like I said, which is rotating and kind of experimental and awesome. They have lots of good beers. They're all non-alcoholic. If you want a discount code for them, follow me on Instagram. Sometimes you'll find one on there. And
if you want to support us, definitely rate us, share us, download the episodes, follow our podcast on wherever you get your podcasts. You can support us with money at Anchor.
You can find it from Instagram on our link tree. I will put that in the episode description as well, which is @_podofthedragon, same as Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook. You can email us. We want to hear from you guys. Email us, please.
Talk to us. And we also have an Etsy store, so you can buy some things.
Yes, we really appreciate all the support we've been getting from you guys. We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we want to keep doing it. So give us, you know, a like or a subscribe, or if you have the means, go support us on our support page. But whatever way works for you, we appreciate it regardless. Yeah. So thank you for listening. And
say we got one more Game of Thrones recap coming your way, and then we'll be jumping right into House of the Dragon. So exciting stuff is happening.
Yes, we are really stoked for that show to start. And in the meantime, dreams didn't make us podcasters, Christine. Dragons did.
Dracadas.
Bye forever.
Bye forever. I was gonna say, I hate the word impregnable.
Oh, yeah, fuck that word.
They use it too much on this show. Fuck that word.